everyone, and welcome to Televisions, the podcast, an audio companion to the Televisions website and a show made by Anglophiles for Anglophiles. I'm Lacey Bogger Miles, still struggling to say my new name correctly, and this is our first episode of the new year 2021 coming at ya, for whatever that means. But despite the fact that 2021 so far is feeling an awful lot like 2020, one of the consistent things around here is I am joined, as always, by my partner in crime, Miss Annie Bundle.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you today?
Second verse, same as the first. I mean, is it 2021?
It is technically 2021, but you know, the 1960s didn't really like start until like 1962. So, you know,
that did not make me feel better.
Yeah. So, you know, it could be a while before we get out of this whole 2020, you know, first gear that
business.
We're stuck in. Yeah. Maybe things will change by the end of January, but not today. Today is not that day.
What do we say to the god of death?
Not today. All right. So anyway, I'm actually pretty excited about today's episode. I don't know about you.
I am too, for two reasons. One, it turned out the show that we're going to talk about is kind of precisely the show that we all need at this moment. And two, because Janet Mullaney is back to talk about it with us.
Yay!
Hey, Janet.
Hey, it's nice to be here again, and I'm so excited that we're talking about this show.
Happy 2020-ish one.
Oh, I don't know. I'm looking for something that isn't fake wood to touch at the moment.
I know.
Yeah.
I could knock on my desk. It's IKEA. Does that count as wood?
No. My desk is
IKEA. Probably not.
My desk is very old IKEA, and I'm pretty sure it's a substance that never grew anywhere and had green things on it. So
anyway, all creatures, great and small, are what we're talking about on this fine day. And I have to tell you, like I said a second ago, I will fully admit that I was kind of like whatever about this show. I know a lot of people are really into the classic version. I always thought it was a little felt like dated and cheesy to me, but don't throw things at me, people who hear that. I'm about to say a lot of real nice stuff because I loved this. I felt like I watched like more than one. I will only discuss like what we need to discuss, but I've watched like several episodes of it now just because it was so like soothing. If especially like after the past, you know, week and change that we have all had for a variety of reasons, I was like just really grateful. It was this nice, like sort of gentle, low stakes, like calm thing. Like everyone's really nice and there's animals. And the biggest problem is whether or not like the cow will give birth. Like more of that. Thanks.
Yeah. I have to say like, so, you know, this year, this 2021 for all that is being extremely 2020 at us right now, this year marked Masterpiece's 50th anniversary. And so, you know, the idea here is that we're going back to, you know, the classics, you know, and we're rebooting the classic to bring it to PBS. PBS actually co-produced this show with the intention of airing it this January as the kickoff for Masterpiece's 50th anniversary. The other reason why All Creatures, the idea to reboot it wasn't just because of Masterpiece's 50th anniversary. It's also because the James Herriot books upon which they are based also had their 50th anniversary last year. The very first one, which I believe is called If Only They Could Talk, was published in 1970. So when it aired in the UK last summer, it was airing on the 50th anniversary of the book being published. And now that it's over here, it's airing on the 50th anniversary of Masterpiece Theater. So this is very much an anniversary type of show. And I feel like the show almost kind of gives off that aura. Like people know, like there's a level where this show knows that it is historical, that it is a remake of a beloved classic, and that it is doing everything it can to continue to be a beloved classic. And I think it nails it in every single dimension.
Yeah, it's sort of interesting because the word that comes to my mind when I think of All Creatures Great and Small, particularly the original, is nostalgia. And there is nostalgia in this series, but at the same time, it feels very, very immediate. And there are some differences between the original and the new version, which is good because that's what a new version should do. It should give you new perspectives. I have just enjoyed it thoroughly. I finished watching it this morning, the whole series, and I was just delighted by the end of it. The first episode, well, gosh, poor James.
I know.
I mean, honestly, like from the moment his mother is there going, well, you're just going to have to work on the docks. I was like, no, lady, don't you crush his dream.
I'm also like, look at him. Do you think he would last like 2 days on the docks? Seriously. Are you kidding me? Like, mm-hmm. Come on.
Oh, but he's an athlete. Remember, we see him running.
Oh, right.
At the
he
beginning.
Goes for runs.
And he's actually very physically strong and very tough. Emotionally as well.
Well, you'd have to birth a calf out of a cow.
Yes, exactly. So I think he is quite short. I mean, actors always look taller than they are, I find. And also, if you do see them in person, you're struck by the fact that they're small people with gigantic heads. But he looks very tall and athletic and energetic, which is what he is. And he also, despite the awful things that happened to him in this first episode, he has this sort of confidence. He doesn't let things faze him.
Even when he's pulled the wrong cat out of the wrong
Yeah,
cage.
The wrong cat and the being kicked into the mud twice by a ginormous horse and... you know,
I'm sorry, I can't get over the ginormous
bull.
The absolute unit.
Yes,
that drives him up on the wall. That was amazing.
Can we just give a shout out to the Merle? I mean, seriously, yes. Like this show very much to me. Like, I don't know if our readers are big into Twitter, but the Museum of English Rural Life is a very popular Twitter feed. And they post pictures of, you know, farm life from basically like this era and, you know, many, many before it. And yeah, I felt a little bit like this show is the Merle come to life.
Exactly.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. It's in my hometown, by the way. So
oh, really?
I've been there,
what?
Yeah.
And you have to go hug their social media manager for me.
Well, the social media manager, the one who came up with the perfect unit, he posted a picture of a large woolly sheep. And as you know, in historic times, all animals are rectangles. and said something like, look at this perfect unit. And
absolute
they went
unit.
Viral, which was not something the museum was expecting. But they are very, very entertaining and funny people. When the museum has been open, they have suggested that visitors stay one perfect unit apart.
what was I going to say? But yeah, I think the reason that I think people like this, though, because it is like the biggest problem they face is like he had a little much to drink at the pub and like put the wrong cats in cages. Like that's where I'm at right now with my mental ability. Like, yeah. Also as a cat lady, I appreciate like the cat representation on television. Like, you know, give cats their rights.
Well, I will say that as the series progresses, you realize what is going on with the characters, what their backstory has been, because the way the book and the first series was structured, it's suddenly Siegfried Farnan bursts onto your screen. He's like an avalanche or something. Now, what made him that way? Why is he? I mean, he's in some ways the boss from hell.
I have to say, I love Samuel West in this role.
Yeah, I thought he was great.
Oh my God, me too.
Yeah, I feel like I've just seen Samuel West basically like, you know, find the performance that's going to like, you know, basically like define his career.
You know what? I really hope so. He seems like the nicest man on Twitter. And also I was honestly a little bit worried about how I would feel about him in the show because I don't know how many of you either talking to me right now or listening to me in the void. Went through Mr. Selfridge.
Oh, yes. That's true.
Oh, yes.
And I hated his character on Mr. Selfridge, like, so much. So much.
Yes.
And I realize that actors and characters are different, so no one yell at me for that. But like, I really thought that my dislike of, I dislike that character so much I can't even remember his name. Like, I thought it would carry over negatively.
He played Frank. He played Frank the publisher. Yes. You know, I loved him on The Crown. He was Anthony Blunt at the beginning of season 3.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and he was also Walter Pohl in Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell.
I just can't get away from him on Mr. Selfridge, and I was really concerned that this would, yes, like, my dislike would carry over, but I think he's wonderful in this. And
yeah, he, yay, was also Leonard Bast in, oh, good Lord, I've forgotten the name of it, sorry.
Howard's End.
He was in Howard's End. He was Leonard Bast, who is this angry, miserable person. And I thought he was fantastic in that because he really gave a fully rounded performance. He was so believable. And I think with the role of Siegfried, he could very easily be a sort of caricature. You know, there's the tweeds, there's the beard, there's the pipe, there's the looniness of it all.
I know. Why does he leave his pipe in his mouth when he's driving if it's not lit? Anybody, like, this is legit, like, a question that I had multiple times.
Yes. Men who smoke pipes spend very little time actually inhaling. They spend most of the time poking at the pipe, sucking on it, trying to get it to draw, trying to get it draw, and then giving up and just having it as a pacifier.
Yeah,
it's an excuse to fiddle about.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to your much more important point, I'm sure.
Did I have one? I think my much more important point was that this series is about the animals, yes, but because of the restrictions on the treatment of animals in film and TV, they can't show as much as the old series did, you know, and everybody seemed to have their arm up an animal at some point or another.
Actually, was part of a roundtable with these actors before the show came out, and they talked about the experience of filming the cow and the cow birth. And as you said, the rules are that anyone who doesn't actually know how to do a thing to an animal, they can't do it, because then it would be animal cruelty. So the actual birthing of the calf is B-roll footage with real veterinarians, and the actors,
and a real cow,
and the actors are using a fake back half of a cow, and they basically splice these together, and so they told the stories of basically working with this fake half a cow.
So to make the show, someone somewhere literally had to stick his hand up a cow.
Veterinarians birthed it. That is real footage of veterinarians with a cow.
Also, the baby's real.
Yeah, but then the actual actors themselves are working with a fake cow. And that's true basically for all of everything you see with the animals. That's basically the truth, because they're not allowed to. And, you know.
Wait, so does that mean back in the day, the old show, like, they were just willy-nilly sticking their hands up cows?
Yeah, like the James Herriot in the old show. He worked with a vet for a couple of weeks, and the vet would say, here, try doing this, and he would. So he got this massive fast training into being a vet. And it looked authentic because it was.
My mouth is hanging open. I'm sorry.
Yeah, honestly, I didn't think it didn't look authentic. Like, I knew going into this, because I'd been in that round table, that was a reality, that they weren't actually, that this was spliced together. But honestly, like, I was not distracted by that.
I just assumed it was all fake. And that no real cows were being violated? Oh, yes.
No cows were violated, but there were cows there. And that calf was, that shorthorn calf was so beautiful. That was really lovely.
Okay, so was that cow really, like, born for the show? I mean, not like...
I think they had footage. Now, remember, this was produced by the same BBC channel that produced The Yorkshire Vet, which is my
favorite
series ever. Yes, I'm always talking about The Yorkshire Vet. And they had vets actually at work, and they had births, and they had, you know, slimy little newborn calves blinking from the straw, looking adorable and leggy. So that's probably what they used.
Yeah, I just assumed it was all fake. So, oh, no. Joke's on me.
And those were real cats.
I think the cats did look real. Two of them look like mine.
Yeah. The thing about cats that has always, you know, amused me about when you use them on camera is that the thing about cats is that either they behave, and it's amazing because they're cats and they behaved, or they don't behave, and it's hilarious because they're cats. What did you expect?
Here, lie here.
Yeah, exactly. The thing is about the show that really got me more than the actors or the animals, though I do love the performances. And even I know we're only talking about the first episode here, but for those waiting for Dame Diana Rigg, the late Dame Diana Rigg, she comes in episode 2, so you don't have very long to wait.
We can be a little vague. She's wonderful.
Yes. She's amazing.
R.I.P. Yeah. to a legend, by the way.
But honestly, the real star of the show for me, more than the actors or the animals, are the hills and the dales.
Oh, that yes.
So beautiful.
Like, they feel like they're in the same way that Downton Abbey, like, you know, Highclere Castle is basically like an extra star that isn't billed in the credits, or like the cliff sides in Poldark. Like, I feel like those hills are their own character and just as important as everything else that happens in the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's that absolutely amazing scene where James gets off the bus at the wrong place and he's in this absolutely vast, empty green landscape, and it takes your breath away. It really is absolutely amazing. And I mean people are going to love it for that too. You're right, Annie.
I also, especially even more now, I think, when like we can't go anywhere.
Yeah.
So like, that is not the view out my window. I don't know about y'all. Yes.
And honestly, like, one of the things I kind of did was sort of time, like, you know, there are full minutes where this show does nothing but just sort of stand there and pan the camera across the landscape.
Yeah.
Like, there are entire scenes where the entire point of it is not for the actors to do anything. It's not even for the animals. It's just for you to stare at the where the land meets the sky. And I just, I loved that. More than anything else, like this is, you know, honestly, it's like watching a David Attenborough special without him lecturing about how the world is ending. Like, honestly, and I love David Attenborough specials. I really, really do. But like, you know, at this point, he really does yell at you that the world is ending and that it's all changed since like he started doing this in the 1950s. And it can be really depressing sometimes. And, you know, this is that without the depressing parts.
Mm-hmm. I know, it's very cottagecore for a TV show. I know I keep bringing up that, but
isn't it? I was thinking that too. Yeah.
I don't know why I keep coming back to the word gentle, but like, it is.
Oh, yes, absolutely. My review of this used the word gentle like 5 times and I had to like open up. I had to be like, synonyms for gentle.
But it's, I mean, and maybe it feels I started to say out of time, but I don't quite mean that, but I do a little.
Oh no, it's timeless. It's definitely timeless.
You look at this versus some of the like more, you know, like high stakes, high octane puzzle box kind of shows, and it's just like completely 180 different. And I truly do not think it could have arrived at like a more needed moment.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, one of the things about like the original All Creatures Great and Small, which I watched a few episodes of before this came out, was that, you know, it feels very much like the it's kind of like the platonic ideal of what Americans expect British TV to look and sound like. You know, thick northern accents, you know, sprawling hillsides, quaint towns, working class, salt of the land farmers. You know, it's pastoral. But at the same time, like, it also had a very much a very, like, this is a very specific time and place. Of just before World War II, of just of a world that has just left us. And the thing about the new one is that it really doesn't feel like that. Like, it could be 1939, or it could be 1955, or it could honestly be, well, maybe not 1975, but you know what I mean. Like, there, you know, it's the world where electricity and telecommunications have become commonplace, but modern technology does not yet exist.
Yeah, but I think as we get into the series, you will realize that World War One is still the defining factor of this generation's life.
Yes.
And people are still living with that. They still have people in the community who have been injured in the war, you know, mentally or physically. And that was the major event of their lives. And also that England had been in a terrible depression for a long time, which is why James had so much trouble finding a job. So I think it is very much of the time. The funny thing about it, you mentioned cottagecore. I kept looking at the clothes because, as you know, I always look at the clothes and thinking, ooh, nice tweeds. but they do look very well dressed and very clean. In fact, I think James looks cleaner than he should after being in the mud. I mean, he's probably wearing...
Yes, in the mud twice.
He's probably wearing some amazing Scottish tweed jacket that's 2 inches thick and would and instantly repel any foreign bodies just for the heck of it. But basically, people wore the same clothes day after day. And particularly for something like a suit or a men's jacket. And so, and everything looks rather new and squeaky clean. And I thought that was a bit of a drawback, but I'm probably going to be the only person bothered by that, to be honest.
I honestly think that helps with the timeless aspect of it, though.
Yeah.
And sort of makes it feel like a thing out of time, that there's a level of non-realism in the same way that, say, like Bridgerton does the same thing, or even like Dickinson or any period piece that we've had recently, you know, because there have been quite a few of them, where, you know, everybody's teeth are straight and everybody's clothes are clean and everybody's hair looks great, even though that's really not the way it was. You know, that really sort of it puts it in the fantasy world, and it makes it feel less of a time. And I think that's partly what I was feeling in the difference between the original and this one.
Yes. On the other hand, the beginning sequences in Glasgow, where they were living in a tenement, and obviously everything was very, very run down. People were poor. That is like night and day, with Yorkshire representing day, which was actually very clever, because it caught what the reality of life at the time. And then James goes to this amazing, green, wonderful, beautiful place.
Yeah, heaven, but, you know, with cows and pigs.
Yes, yes, yes. Although working for a loony, I must say. I also like the way the series treated Mrs. Hall, because, I mean, she's smoking hot, and Siegfried is very gentlemanly in that he doesn't seem to notice. But you, as you go, as the series goes on, here I go again, you get some backstory there. And
she's also from Mrs. Selfridge and Anna Madeley.
Yes.
Wait, who was she on Mr. Selfridge? Clearly, I didn't hate her as much as I hated Frank.
I don't remember off the top of my head. I just know that that's where I've seen her before.
Yes. She must have been one of the ladies on the shop floor.
That makes sense.
I can't remember either.
Yeah.
But I will say, I think to your point about, I think she is a much better and more interesting character than I was expecting.
Yeah.
Mostly because this is like a very bro-tastic show.
Oh, yes.
Like, this is all about like male friendships and male feelings and like male identity. And it's just very like man heavy.
Yeah. Even though we technically have an Academy Award winner playing the love interest, and like, but she's sort of like not really like, you know, she's really there as sort of as it goes on, she'll be sort of like the lady that they're competing over between her and the Harry Potter actor. What's his name? Matthew Lewis. Thank you.
I was like, Neville Longbottom.
Yes. I was like, his name is not actually Neville Longbottom. the surprisingly hot Matthew Lewis as Hugh.
So hot.
Yeah. Startlingly.
Sorry, he just had like the glow up for the ages, and I cannot resist pointing that out like every time his name is mentioned.
It's true though. Like it's kind of amazing.
I will actually say back to my you know, I gotta talk about the ladies.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. But for all the fact that there's not like a very heavy female presence in this show, I think they're very careful about, and I don't know how to phrase this so it doesn't sound super weird, but like none of the men in this show are are, like, the men in the show are also very interior. Like, they're very, when I say feminine, I don't mean girly. I just mean that they are allowed to have, like, a lot of depth to them that you don't always get in shows like this, especially when they're shows about rural people, people who are farmers, people who are, like, salt of the earth types or whatever. You don't get a lot of that stuff. But, like, it bothers me less that there's fewer women that I would like in this story just because the men are so interesting and well-written for their own sakes.
I know the directors and writers really wanted to bring women to the fore in this as much as they could. So you have to applaud them for doing that. And I think Helen's early appearance with Jane just really encapsulated her character and what her relationship with James is going to be.
That's with the absolute unit, Cal.
The absolute unit. He's a bull, Lacey. I'll explain that to you later.
I know. I just like saying absolute unit. It's fun.
Yes, it is fun. Yeah, I mean, gosh, that's a big animal. And James is on a wall, actually looking rather silly. And then Helen arrives. She's carrying a chicken. And she gives James the chicken. So now he's a man standing on a wall holding a chicken. And she's the one taking charge of the bull and tying him up again and so on. And it's like, well, yeah, I mean, it's going to take a woman to do this because not so long ago, women were doing a lot of men's jobs during the war. I mean, Helen, I think, is younger than that. Yeah, yeah. So...
But, like, all of those women in that area would have had to learn how to do for themselves anyway.
Yes,
I hadn't thought of that, but you're
correct. And, you know, also,
correct.
There would have been a lot of women around because a lot of men would have gone off to war and never come back.
Yeah, there basically was, like, a missing generation of men for a really long time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I feel like this show is what PBS has been looking for quite some time to put in the slot, basically ever since Downton Abbey went off the air.
Hey now, I like Victoria. Leave it alone.
I know you do. And I have to say that when I saw that Jenna Coleman is in talks to do another season of Victoria, I did get excited. I would like some more Victoria. I think it actually has, like, potential to do more.
Sidebar, I'm watching season 2 of Discovery of Witches at the moment. And Tom Hughes is Kit Marlowe in it.
Oh.
And it's weird. Like, it's just, like, seeing him in that role is very strange. Anyway, sidebar over.
Okay, anyway, the point is that even though, like, I and you both liked Victoria, it was not the show that captured the zeitgeist in the same way that, like, say, Downton Abbey did. And, you know, I feel like PBS has sort of struggled to figure out what to put in this January slot that it sort of carved out with Downton ever since Downton ended. And Victoria sort of held the slot for a while, but it wasn't really up to it. And then last season we had Sanditon with its, you know, dark and grittiness, and it wasn't, even if it had been renewed, it wasn't gonna work there. And I feel like this is the first real show that's landed in that slot where I've been like, yes, this is the follow-up to Downton Abbey that I've been looking for.
That's interesting.
Like, it really is a quintessential PBS show.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would go as far as you do about being like, I think it's different than Downton, but I think it is like,
absolutely. Downton has more drama to it, has more grandiose ambitions, etc. Yeah, this is smaller.
Yeah, I do think this is quintessentially the kind of show that has been and should be on Masterpiece for sure.
Yes, and the interesting thing about it is that although obviously there would have been class differences at the time, the show minimizes them. For instance, in the books and in the early series, whenever one of the veterinarians goes to a farm, he's addressing the farmers by their first names, and they're calling him Mr. whatever. And in this, they're on first name terms, which I really, really liked. And the fact that Mrs. Hall was not being a Mrs. Danvers in the back of the house or something. She's there and she eats with them.
She's part of their family.
Yes, yeah,
basically.
Yes. Well, they are rather like a family. And you see that when Tristan arrives, that's the feckless younger brother arrives, because Siegfried and Mrs. Hall are like mum and dad, and Tristan is like the naughty son.
She's not wrong. But I think when I wrote with Mrs. Hall, I was afraid it was going to be like a Mrs. Hudson on Sherlock kind of thing.
Yeah. Yes.
Where like she just pops in every once in a while and then is just generally responsible for like cleaning up after the men. Mm-hmm. I love that she has her own like very clear opinions, and she even has her own like a little later on her own sort of arc going on.
Yes.
That's separate and apart from the guys at the veterinarian's office.
And also that she can handle Siegfried. She's not afraid of him. And she will tell him to go away if she's fed up with him, and he goes away. And they have a very nice, close relationship. You see that in the first episode where they're playing Scrabble together. And they are like a pair of old friends, which I think is what they are. And it is just so nice to see, like, thank goodness Siegfried has someone to talk to, because otherwise he would be twice as bad as he is, because he really is obnoxious.
Well, he clearly likes the people he meets with four legs rather than the ones with two. Like, and that's supposed to be the stereotype that he embodies, obviously, but at the same time, like, you really feel that.
Oh, yes. Yes. Well, he actually says to James something like, I'm paraphrasing here, it's something like, the animals are all right. The problem is with the people.
Yeah, that's like one of the first things I think he actually says.
Yes. Yes.
You know what I love? Back to the animals for a second. But like, I really love how conscientious is the show about showing you how much, like, all these people really love their animals.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're not, a lot of times in shows about like farms and things, like the animals are just sort of like, you know, they're there to
living
do whatever
props.
Their animal, mm-hmm. yeah, to do whatever their animal job is.
Mm-hmm.
And like that, the one, like the people with the cow, they're like really concerned about like, their cows are like not pets, but like family kind of. Like, yeah, they have things they're supposed to do, but like they're worried about, they love their animals. And I'm sorry, I'm a sucker yes. for anyone who loves animals.
Yes. And they're also, and you're also very aware of how vital those animals are to the family's life. I mean, the country's still in a depression, and probably people are losing farms right, left and centre, you know, like a bad crop or a prize breeding animal that is injured could mean that you're going to lose your home. But at the same time, there is so much concern and care for the animals, which is really lovely to see. Oh, makes me go all misty-eyed.
I know.
Yeah.
This is just such a, like, it's such a heart show, kind of.
Yeah.
Like, it's, I don't really, like, when I was sitting down to think about, like, what we were going to talk about today, I was like, I don't know what we're going to talk about today, because there's, like, stuff happens.
Yes.
And there's plot, sort of, mm-hmm. but there's not like there isn't anything here that like you're going to be like, what is the mystery or a controversial storyline or whatever. It's just like nice.
Yes.
And I have to say, like, especially right now, like, I love yes. that. Like, you
yes.
know, like, the only, you know, message that this show has, like, the show isn't trying to, like, push, like, you know, political views or morals or anything like that. All it's trying to do is basically be about a guy whose heart is so big that he loves all creatures, great and small.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's really
nice
it.
I mean, if it's got a message, it's like, be nice to animals.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's right now something that is just so undemanding and so sweet and so just nice and calm. And let's just stare at this field as he drives down the road. You know, like, mm-hmm. I'm here for that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think this is going to be a show that we discuss every week or anything, but I'm mm-hmm. definitely going to be watching it.
Oh, yes.
Well, mm-hmm. I've already watched half of it. Spoilers. But like, it's worth watching, even if it's not something that you can have like a rigorous discussion about afterwards or whatever, other than to be like, that cat was really cute. Yes.
Now, I think the show really becomes richer and more complex as it progresses. I was pretty horrified by Siegfried because he was as bad as Robert Hardy ever used to be.
Oh, no, yeah. I don't want to hate him. I want to keep liking him.
No, he actually becomes nicer. And I also felt that in episode two, when Tristan appears, I thought Tristan just came over as a sort of, you know, spoiled posh boy, a sort of frat boy type. And but again, the characters develop. That's the great thing about it. Tristan grows up, Siegfried becomes a bit better, and James just sort of goes from strength to strength, other than his love life.
I know. How about that? That guy's never, I think his name is Nicholas Ralph.
It is.
He's like legit never been anything else.
Yeah. Basically, this is his first real role.
Yes.
And good job, kid.
Yeah. I think he has like a movie coming out or supposed to come out this year that he's filmed since getting cast in All Creatures. But yeah, like this is totally his first role. And, you know, the only thing that I kind of worry about for him a little bit is the original actor, Timothy something or other.
West.
The original guy played James Herriot, he basically could never move on. Mm-hmm. He never really had a career after All Creatures went off the air in 1990.
Yes, his agent used to get infuriated because he'd call up for roles for him and they'd say, oh, but he's a veterinarian, not an actor.
Yeah, and like I worry a little bit for Nicholas Ralph that especially if this show takes off the way that it took off with me anyway, and if it takes off on PBS and on Channel 5 across the pond in the same way, like this basically could be his stereotype role that he can't get out of, and I really hope that that's not true because I think he's a great actor. I think he carries this show effortlessly. Like I don't think if you don't know that this is basically like his first role as an actor,
I don't think you would ever tell.
Yeah,
I think he's going to get other roles because he shows what he can do as James Herriot. He has range and he has breadth, and I think he just does a fantastic job. I mean, they all do.
It's a great ensemble.
Yes, it is. It is.
I know, we're just sitting. I know, it feels really weird to have an episode where we're all just sitting here loving on something. Instead of, like...
Well, I did think they looked too clean.
I did think some of the farmers, like, especially the ones that have, like larger animals, like my friend, Mr. Absolute Unit, like, should be dirtier.
Yes.
Like, there's mud.
There's mud and there's poo.
Yeah, there's. I bet that an animal that large must produce a tremendous amount of poo.
Yes.
You would not want to scoop their litter boxes.
No, I would not. That would be a very large litter box. And other good news we should probably mention, though, is that they have already announced a season 2 for this show.
Yes.
Which means we can avoid some of the heartbreak of the past year for fans. And also, I mean, that it must have done pretty well in England, so...
Oh, it did. People loved it in England.
Oh, yes. And there's also, for us, it will be the final episode, but episode 7 is actually technically the Christmas special.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
In the same way that Downton Abbey did Christmas specials?
Yeah, Downton used to do it
that. Basically, this got the Christmas special right away. Like, they went directly into, oh, this is big enough that we can just start giving you Christmas specials. And, you know, I think that's a brilliant sign, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, honestly, like, once a show starts getting Christmas specials, like, that's proof that it's, like, something that's, you know, that just embedded itself in British culture and isn't going anywhere for a while. And I really hope the same thing happens over here because as I said, I feel like it's the platonic ideal of a PBS show.
It really is. Like, it's exactly what you look to Masterpiece for, which, you know, I mean, not that I don't support Masterpiece, like thinking out of the box and taking a risk on some different kinds of properties, but like, yeah, this is it.
Well, I really hope that people, you know, find comfort and joy in this because I hesitate to use the term wholesome.
But it is wholesome. That's exactly what it is.
Yes, right, it is. It's wholesome.
And sometimes that is what you need. And I feel like we as a collective we, like, need the escapism of it, and we need a reminder that not everything has to be a tire fire all the time.
Right, but it's not a wimpy show. I mean, there are some serious things that happen. I'm not going to tell you what they are. It would depress you. And I mean, there are occasions when the characters are in tears or close to tears, which would never happen. I don't think that ever happened in the original series. But that's the sign of our times. That's what we want. We want that strong emotion, that strong emotional response. And the show delivers.
Yeah, I feel like this is totally a show that, like, my nieces could watch with no problem. Like, I would not be worried about telling, like, my sister-in-law that, you know, she could sit down and watch this with them.
I know, I'm trying to think of, like, when the last time we had a really, like, the whole family can sit down and watch it together kind of show on Sunday nights. You know, because a lot of them recently have had, like, murder.
Yeah. Prostitutes. Yeah, like, you know, Hugh Laurie being terrible. Like, yeah, no, there's just no, honestly, like, I may never.
Roadkill is so bad. I will say it every time.
May never forgive PBS for making me watch Roadkill. But
yeah. I recapped it. I gave that to myself.
I'm so sorry. Anyway, but yeah, this is such a family show. And mm-hmm. and in a way that even Downton was not a family show. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love that, too, because, you know, I grew up watching PBS with my parents. Like, it was the thing we could all watch together. So, yeah.
Oh, yes. You gather around the television at 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock on a Sunday and you have all this great stuff. It's wonderful. That's what PBS does.
Yay, PBS.
Make a gift.
Good job, Masterpiece.
That is right. Yeah. WETA.org or televisions.org. We have a donate button on top. Support your local station. I think that is a great note to end on for our first episode of 2021. Janet, thank you as always for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. And I love talking about this show. So, and I loved watching it.
We may do another episode on this before the season's over. We'll mm-hmm. see how the schedule shakes out. But yeah. For now, tell the people where they can find you on the interwebs.
Well, I'm on Facebook, but it's not particularly interesting. And I'm on I'm on Twitter at Janet_Mullaney. And I don't really do much there. I tend to like things a lot. And you know, I write television, so you can find my pieces there.
Right, Annie, you're up.
You can find me at Annie Bundle on Twitter. You can find me at Miss Annie Bundle on Facebook. You can find pictures of my cats, who are not nearly as cute as the ones on. Well, no, they're different kind of cute than the ones on All
bigger.
Creatures. They have very much. Their tails are much fluffier. Their tails are much fluffier.
Those cats' tails are much fluffier than any cats I've seen. They look like bottle brushes.
They kind of are amazing that way. And they are well, not the best behaved cats right now since they're kind of in their teen phase. But you can find them on at Annie Bundle on Instagram. Let's see, I am a staff writer at Elite Daily. I am a regular contributor to televisions.org. You may have heard of it. And a freelance around the web. Right now I'm actually recapping American Gods over at the AV Club. So you know, look for my recaps there. But basically, if you want to know what I'm writing this week, just follow me on Twitter because I retweet all my bylines anyway. Okay, fastest way to know what I'm writing today.
This is just us all looking for friends to talk to on the internet. I, for example, am LaceyMB on Twitter, and I write a lot here at Televisions, even though I don't think I'm recapping any of the winter shows, which is a little weird for me. But I write a lot about other things around the entertainment web as well. I always tweet my bylines, so just give me a follow and you can see what I am up to. You can see my adorable cats who are in a tiny hellion phase right now. They are at Baker and Hammer on Instagram. And you can follow the site and the pod at Tele_Visions or Televisions blog, all one word, on Facebook. The Tele_Visions was on Twitter. I don't know if I actually said that part. It's a new year. I still have the same attention span. Televisions is brought to you by WETA, and if you like what we do, you can visit televisions.org and click on the donate button up top to help us keep doing it and support public media at the same time. It is a new year, which is much like the old year, apparently. I don't know how I feel about that, or I do know how I feel about that, and I don't like it, but we're all still hanging in here together. We are all we got. Please take care of each other, wear a mask, hand sanitize. Stay home. That is like the greatest piece of advice I can give anyone who may be listening who's not already doing that. But just, like, you know, be safe. We got a lot more days to get through till 2022. Thanks for listening to our first episode of the new year, and we will see you next week.